AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Let's Chat Reality. I'm Michael.
And I'm Molly.
And we are here today for a very special episode. First, Molly, somehow it's our 150th episode of the podcast already. Can you believe that?
Wow, that's so exciting. No, it's been a wild journey, but it's been exciting going through all these episodes with you.
It has. And so thank you to each and every one of you who has made it possible for us to do this for so long, going on almost 3 years now. But most importantly, we are joined today by the leader of the robot army, the number one Vinny the Lip impersonator himself, and now most significantly, the author of USA Today's best-selling book, Behind the Mirror, Inside the World of Big Brother. It's Taryn Armstrong. Taryn, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us today. So we like to start off all our podcasts. You touched on this a little bit at the start of your book, but we like to get the reality TV origin story of all of our guests. So was Big Brother the first reality show that you came across as a kid, or was Survivor, or even something else that that came before that for you?
I would definitely say Survivor. I mean, it started first, and so I watched it first. And then when Big Brother came on the air, I watched that a bit in season one. And then it was really season two of Big Brother that I really loved. But even then, it wasn't like, it didn't become like part of my identity as like, because at the time it was, everybody watched these shows. Like, it wasn't like a me thing. And I was also like 8 and 9 years old. So it really wasn't until like season five and then certainly season six where it was like, oh, this is now something that's important to me, and like meaningful to me as something that is unique to me because nobody else I know is watching it now.
Yes. Well, before we get into the book, it's been a couple of months now since Big Brother 27 ended. So now that you've had some distance from all the late nights, how are you feeling about this season as a whole?
I mean, it was a great season. It was really difficult to cover in terms of the amount of like time and effort. But I'm certainly glad we had it, especially now that it's over. People were really invested all the way through. They loved the coverage. The ratings were up. So just a really good and healthy season for the show, I would say, overall, which is very nice. You know, if every season was that intense all the way through, need to maybe think about some strategies to get through them. But, you know, it, especially after the fact, it's been good.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, obviously that transition probably from going from those live feeds for 24/7 for three months straight to then suddenly none at all once the season ends. What's your typical process like once the season ends, and what does your life look like after that?
It tends to be different, but it's usually not over yet because for me, it's like, okay, the season has ended now. In fact, for most seasons, that's when the work ramps up again because I'm prepping for deep dives and that takes a really long time. And then I'm doing the deep dives, which takes a really long time, and everything else. And that was the case for this season as well. I basically jumped straight into prepping for Ashley's deep dive in particular. And then, of course, had Rachel and Keanu and then eventually Morgan. And so that was like a long process of getting through all of those. And then on top of that, just a week after the season ended, I recorded the audiobook for Behind the Mirror. So it didn't feel like I was really out from under it all until maybe like a month later. Especially like once I went to, we had a live event in San Francisco for the podcast and I did a book signing there. I got back from that and then did the deep dive with Morgan like the next day. And once I finished that, it was like, okay, like we really can now take a moment. And so that was nice. And it's been really nice feeling healthier, sleeping more, being more active, all of the normal human life things that can sometimes go under the radar during a Big Brother season.
Yeah, and no Big Brother Canada now in the spring, so you're gonna have a bit of a time before the next Big Brother proper season starts up. So hopefully you can keep that relaxing vibe until then, what I'm sure will be another intense summer.
I hope so. Yeah, it really is like, because obviously, you know, Michael, I'm doing a bunch of stuff on Patreon and I'm still doing stuff with the book, but it's like, it's just different. It's just covering Big Brother is so all encompassing. And yeah, so like publishing a book and doing a book release felt leisurely in comparison.
That's what I guess the hard part of it actually writing it is over with. So this is just the fun part. This is the, you know, getting all the well-deserved accolades and getting to talk about it with people and everything. And I'm sure that, you know, it's still, of course, a lot of work, but I'm sure it's, you know, it's more fun than anything else, hopefully.
It is fun. It has been fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So how long have you had the idea for this book? Could you tell us more a little bit about the story behind how it all came to be?
I mean, really, it's all a credit to my agent, Lauren, who just reached out to me a few years ago and basically said, you know, I've been a fan for a while. I also went to Emerson College, so we're like fellow alumni. And I think you'd be a really good writer if you're interested in writing a book. And I was super interested. I always wanted to be a writer. And she was ready to do any kind of book I was interested in doing. But for me, it just made sense to start with Big Brother, to just write something that I was close to, that I had an audience for, that I felt like I had plenty to say about. And then it just kind of, you know, developed from there. I've told this story a little bit, but like, she gave me the book Bachelor Nation by Amy Kaufman to read. And so I read that book and I was like, okay, I really like this. I think I could for sure do something along these lines for Big Brother. And so like, it wasn't until I did that I even had like any clue what it would look like or what it could be like, or if I could even do it. But when I read that book, I was like, I could definitely do this for Big Brother. And it gave me the confidence to really get started in a way that I really, before I just said yes, without having any clue of how I would actually do it.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite parts of the book was that you sprinkle in stories from your childhood and your personal life. And this isn't something that I feel like we get to hear often from you, at least from what I've experienced and, you know, listening to your podcast and watching your Twitch streams over the years. So talk to me a little bit about like what that process was like of determining how much of your personal life to include and what story specifically you decided.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that's, I was hesitant to do, not because I was worried about like sharing. I do obviously keep as much sort of distance as I can between like my profession and my personal life. But more so, it was just like relevancy. You know, if a fan of mine buys the book and reads the book, hopefully they're interested in stuff about me. But I'm not writing just for fans of mine. I'm writing for anybody that might pick this book off the shelf, anybody that has any kind of passing interest in the show or is interested in learning about it or anything. And for those people in my head, it's like, why am I hearing about some dude who hasn't even been on the show? like talking to me about like his childhood trauma. Like, this isn't about Big Brother. Like, what are we doing here? So that was where a lot of the hesitancy came from for me. There was a decent amount that came, that stemmed from me in the book. But it was, I kept it as light as possible just to, because I felt like it was necessary to give you some amount of perspective of who's the person telling you the story. Because it's not, I'm not some historian who's trying to give like an unbiased, like historical look at the show. I'm telling you a story. And so it's important for you to know who I am and where I'm coming from. And also to have some kind of voice as I'm doing so. But I also didn't want to dive too deep into it and go totally off track. And so I had bits and pieces here and there, and I was just trying really hard to make sure that if I ever did bring myself up, it was incredibly relevant to exactly what we were talking about. And it not only like flowed into the story, but also fit the themes of the chapter that I'm in, and helped illuminate something, like a point I was trying to make in one way or another. And then like the only real piece of big feedback I got after I turned in my initial draft was that my editor was like, I love the parts about you. I wouldn't mind more of that. And I was like, I don't believe you. Like, I just feels that was the hardest part, was adding a little bit more. And so it was less so adding more and more so that, and hopefully this resonates with you guys, that I tried to connect the threads throughout the book. So instead of like adding a ton of like more content about myself, instead I tried to like piece together the story of me in a way that it hadn't been before it was just little random chunks. Mm-hmm. And instead it was like, you know, well, given that that had happened before, this is then what comes next. And just like having those little bits of connective tissue was the main thing I changed there. And so luckily it seems like it's been working for people so far. So that's been nice.
No, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, like that was one of my favorite parts, just because, you know, as someone who has been watching you for all these years also, you know, of course, my perspective is maybe different than other people reading it. But like, I loved getting to know you better. And like you said, like that does so much influence how you look at the show and how you know, especially when you were younger and like, you know, this wasn't just your job. This was just, you know, a show that you loved. And that was something that I really, really loved, was seeing kind of like how your personal life, you know, resonated with the show you were watching and how the two really influenced each other in a very interesting way. So yeah. And I just realized that I don't think I said this on air. I said it before we started recording, but Taryn, I loved this book so much.
Thank you.
I am not a huge reader normally myself, as much as I should be, but I absolutely loved this. And I, you know, even as somebody who, you know, knows most of the history of the show, it was just such a unique look at it and made me think about the show in a very different way than I ever had. So absolutely loved it.
Thank you. Yeah. I think that some of the best feedback I've gotten from people who like are listeners is this sense of like, yeah, I mean, I thought it would be good. I'm a fan of you, but it was actually like really good.
Yeah.
which is by the way, exactly how I felt when I read Steven's book Escape. Mm. I was like, I knew it'd be good, but this is actually great.
I can't wait to
read
so, that.
Yeah. It's really cool because I really, you know, obviously I hoped that this was something that would really resonate and that would work really well. And, you know, I wanted it to be able to stand on its own and be something that wasn't just like, oh, you can write a book because you already have an audience and it translates over. Like I really, like I said, I always wanted to be a writer. And so I wanted the book to mean something outside of the context of my current creator status, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Well, on that note, you write about how much watching Kacer on Big Brother 6 meant to you, and how much you could relate to him and his position in the house. Have you ever had the chance to meet Kacer? And if so, like, what did you say to him? Or if not, what would you say?
I have met him briefly. And I did the thing where I was like, hey, man, meant a lot to me watching you on season 6 growing up. And he was like, that's cool. he vaguely knew who I was via my association with Rob and, you know, just had a nice brief conversation with him. But yeah, apart from that, like, he isn't one of the people I've talked to a ton, or know super well from, you know, all of this stuff. I think he, you know, it's also the sort of thing where it's like, I loved him when he came back. But you know, what he actually meant to me at the time when I was a kid is not super connected to like the Kacer here and now. Not that he's like a different guy or anything, but, you know, I was a kid and I really idealized this person and made him out to be more than just an actual human being. And that's where like a lot of that meaning came from. And all the credit to Kacer for being the guy that was able to elicit that kind of response from a kid back then. But it's not something that I'm like I'm still like, oh man, Kacer's like like my ultimate hero. I still love him. But yeah, I wasn't not quite as like worshiping at the feet of Kacer as I was when I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a chapter about the BB community and how uniquely passionate because of their live feeds that we are. So talk to me a little bit about your relationship with the fandom, because I know you're not a huge like social media person in general, but like, do you feel a need during the Big Brother season to keep yourself in the loop of what the community is discussing, or do you feel like you kind of can remove yourself from that?
It tends to differ based on the season. I think that over time I've become a little bit more entangled in keeping up with things from the community. Back when I started, I was very removed, I would say. But I think over time I've learned that there is a level of insight that I can garner from reading perspectives, specifically just about like, you know, people having issues with a thing that maybe I wouldn't have noticed, or you know, even just like different perspectives on strategies sometimes. It's not something that is huge, but I think that like having a general sense of what the reaction is and what people are talking about is pretty important when I'm talking through what's happening, because if I come off as entirely removed from what most of the discussion is, then I become less relevant to all of that, right? And at the end of the day, I'm still pretty removed, and it does not really influence my coverage much, I would say, because I tend to feel like this is how what I think of this move, and you know, if people think differently, then unless they can convince me otherwise, you know, like I'm still gonna think it's like I'm still gonna hold my opinion and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, sometimes it is just inevitable, and especially as you know, discussion has become even more important with the lack of like flashbacks. You know, I obviously have like a system in place to be able to watch what I need to watch, but fewer and fewer people actually have that, and so you sort of have to dig a little deeper to make sure that you're not missing anything. And so that means more time investment and everything, because at the end of the day, like I can only stay on top of so much, and I'm, you know, I can literally be watching the feed sometimes and then read some discussion afterward and be like, oh, can you believe what they said in that conversation? I'm like, wait, what? I missed that.
Well, and also sometimes there's fake, you know, stories going around with just pictures and then like a quote of somebody saying, like, I remember with Mickey earlier this last season, there was that moment where people were going around saying a quote that ended up being inaccurate, but it, you know, spread everywhere, and you were able to say, hey, I don't think she said that, guys. And so like your voice in that was so important, because, you know, it's the one that probably goes to, you know, reaches the most fans of anyone.
Well, I mean in that particular instance, it was I was initially taken in by it, because I saw the screenshot and I remembered the moment, I remembered watching it. And then there was an attributed quote that sounded pretty similar to a lot of the things that she had said. And, you know, this is the way the memory works. I then remembered hearing it. I was just like, yeah, I remember hearing that. And it was one of those moments, exactly one of those moments where I was like, oh, I didn't remember understanding what they're saying about this now. But now that I hear it, now that I see it read out or written out, like, wow, that's pretty intense. And so I was like, yeah, I definitely should probably, talk about this. And even in the moment as I brought it up, I was like, wait, I didn't verify this. Like, I don't remember verifying that. And I remember in the moment just being like, oh, wait, hold on. And immediately after the podcast, I looked it up, to verify, because it just, it's one of those things where it's like most of, and I can't verify everything. It's impossible. But something like that is something I should have verified before bringing it up. And so I immediately looked at what it was and where it was from. And I listened through the conversation again a couple of times. And I was like, okay, it definitely did not happen at the time that the screenshot was posted. So I think this might be made up. And so I immediately issued the retraction and just like the warning of just like, you have to be careful, because, you know, that post had been just accepted by a lot of people.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of those things. And that was the thing too, where I was really like, damn, because I'd seen a lot of those before and I'd been like, come on. you know, you're not gonna fool me, but a lot of people were fooled, and I was like, guys, come on, it's difficult, and it's gonna get more difficult because it's gonna get easier and easier to just make stuff up and create things, and you know,
oh my god, AI videos, can you, that's really gonna be scary when oh god, I can't even imagine how hard that's gonna be to dispute without flashbacks, so we'll see.
Yeah, well, you write about the Arnold Shapiro era of Big Brother, where there were a lot of casting twists, like exes, twins, long-lost siblings, etc. So if Arnold had stuck around past the All-Star season, what direction do you think the show would have gone in, and how different do you think it will look today?
I think probably the biggest change from Arnold to Allison, in terms of just like the overall feel of the show, is definitely how goofy it is. Allison seems to have, you know, whether it's coming from her or it's coming from somebody else, and she like let the leash loose on that person, or maybe they hired a new person that came in. Whatever the case is, there was a very clear and distinct shift from when Arnold Shapiro was in charge to when Alison Grodner was in charge, where things just got really silly and ridiculous. And which is not to say that things weren't silly or ridiculous before, but they were silly and ridiculous in a more serious way.
Yeah.
Like, here's the drama of siblings that don't know their siblings, or, you know, the twin twist, which was presented as very, it was obviously a ridiculous thing that they did, but it's presented as like, how will they do it? Can they get away with it? And even like in the later stage of his tenure, you know, they have Big Brother All-Stars. They start to have some amount of like goofier competitions, like the pig trough and all of that. But again, like as soon as you hit season 8, it's Alice in Wonderland themed. And now all of a sudden,
cool house though.
It was a cool house, and it was probably one of the best in terms of, like, I think those early days of Alison Grodner art direction, so to speak, were some of her best, because you had the sort of leaning into the campiness of it a bit more, but it was still fair. It was still kind of restrained. Whereas nowadays it's just like constant fart jokes. So, I mean, that's, I think the biggest in terms of immediate impact and feel for a new viewer is that if somebody else were in charge, it likely wouldn't look like this, especially in the modern landscape of reality television, which has not gone, has not existed in this way, in a long time. This style is really outdated, and it's one of the reasons I think Big Brother has in the past at least struggled to build new viewership. Now it did build this season, so they're getting somewhere, but yeah, I think that's probably one of the biggest and most obvious things.
Yeah, no, I think like what's interesting though is that I remember feeling like when we saw the house tour for Big Brother 27, I remember like you were on Twitch and we were talking about this, that like the house was so like classy looking, like it didn't, and I was wondering like, are they going to maybe start to go in a less goofy direction? Like maybe this is the start of something new, and you know, it didn't, but I feel like I wonder if maybe that was like almost a test of like, okay, if we make the show look like not goofy, will maybe more people be interested in it? So, you know, I wonder if that's something that maybe they'll go.
I think they very clearly were hoping to, tap into the Traitors aesthetic, because the Traitors is doing so well. But at the end of the day, they're not really actually interested in doing the Traitors aesthetic. They're interested in doing Mr. Stinky. And so it's really just like, it's a reskin, right? Like, it's just like, let's just take, like, slap on a new coat of paint that looks a little bit like the Traitors, and then just function as normal otherwise, which is, I think, basically exactly what we got. But honestly, I do think it helps. I think it helped a little bit that that there was at least, especially in the early portion of the season, this notion that it was a little bit more Traitors-esque. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine it hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, we love the Traitors, so I love any kind of notion to Traitors-esque that there can be. But you say that BB7 All-Stars was one of the most influential in terms of pushing the meta strategy of BB forward. So can you speak a little bit more on why this is such an important season in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, it's really fascinating. And I think in the book, most of the time I spend talking about the evolution of strategy in that first era of the show is spent on the creation of the concepts that ultimately sort of culminate at BB7. So I don't go too deep into the actual events of Big Brother 7. But I think they're really interesting. I think that the way that you took all of these players who had innovated in the world of Big Brother strategy in different ways, between Allison and Danielle and Dr. Will, and even players like Kaser and players like Jace, who did his own thing. And like, you had the floating, you had the like core alliance building, you had, whatever it is that Dr. Will does, you had the secret alliance stuff with Danielle. All of these people that had innovated came together in one season. And this was before social media was a big thing, and certainly before like any real discussion about this kind of strategy in this way was like mainstream at all. So none of these players were like on top of the meta game of Big Brother strategy. When we get to Big Brother 22 All-Stars, you know, Cody, you know, Derek was on the podcast with me. I interviewed him for my Evolution of Strategy podcast, and Cody's on episode 1 talking about all of the same concepts. You know what I mean? Like, Cody is very well aware of all of the meta gaming on the show. And that was not the case in All-Stars. It was much more rudimentary. And so all these people came in with different ideas of what the game was and what it meant. And you had some of that on Big Brother All-Stars too as well. But the problem was that because Cody was on top of the actual meta, everyone came in with their own versions. And it was like, no, that doesn't work here.
Yeah.
So then they meshed and combined in really interesting ways. The secret alliance between Danielle and Jason became a secret alliance between Danielle and James. And that grew into a secret four-person alliance that was the Legion of Doom with Boogie and Will. And that was like a larger secret alliance that Danielle hadn't really done before. She had done the two-person duo. Now all of a sudden there were four people. They were secretly all together as four people, actually maintaining their secrecy. And also then floating from power structure to power structure, or flowing from winner of a competition to winner of a competition, working on the remaining on season six while they were in power for the first half of the game. And then just like working on whoever came into power. And, you know, I think that Will came in with more of the floating angle, and Danielle was still trying to work the like, hey, we're an actual group angle. And that was the downfall of Danielle, even though her structure helped Will massively get to where he was. And so, I mean, I could talk about it forever, but like, it's so interesting how all
and
of
I could
these
listen to it forever.
Divergent strategies came together and mixed and became something new. And then immediately following, you had Eric Stein go on Big Brother 8, who was on top of Big Brother meta strategy and was able to immediately start implementing all of these things. Again, whether sort of intentionally or not, this was certainly like he knew these things and or consciously or not, I should say. And he utilized them well in season 8. And then of course he was like had both his hands tied behind his back doing that. And then you get to Big Brother 10. And of course that's why I spend a lot of time on Big Brother 10, because that's really where Dan comes in and changes the whole game.
Yeah. Well, before we get to BB10, you talk a little bit about in BB8 and 9, which, you know, very controversial seasons for Big Brother. And you mentioned that at that time you were starting to question the ethicality of the show's existence as a whole. And then you come back around to that question again at the end of the book. But did the process of writing the book impact your feelings on the show at all in any way, positively or negatively?
Yeah, I mean, one of the core questions that I ask in the introduction for me is, should this show exist? You know, I've dedicated my career and to some degree my life to watching and covering and dissecting and analyzing this show. But it's a reality show. It helped inspire a culture that I think has done immense damage to our society. It by itself does damage to its players. It can be, you know, I think sometimes a net negative on its viewers in terms of like how invested they can sometimes get. The producers aren't exactly like a bastion of good decision making or morality most of the time, it seems. And so yeah, like it does sort of beg the question of like, is this a good thing? Like, should we be doing this? And so to answer your question, I honestly, I don't think I really got anywhere with that. Like at the end of the day, it is still all of those things, but it's also a lot of good things. And, you know, does that outweigh it? Does that make it right? Does it make it good? Does it make it okay? Does it make it neutral? Most of the people I talked to for the book, I asked them about this, and almost every single one of them said, of course it should exist. It's like, why not? You know, like it's not a bad thing. It is just a thing, and you can take it or leave it in the way that it exists. And I don't know if I agree with that. I think that there are certainly bad things, but I think there are far, far worse things for sure. And it is, again, I think that like it is the live feeds that kind of carry the day for me with it, where it has this level of transparency and this sort of just massive amount of information that it gives, that it provides, that it has. When it comes to live feeds, you can watch them, you can learn so much from them, and it really prevents the producers from doing a lot of the worst of the things that reality producers often do. And so, you know, if Big Brother is a bad thing, then all other reality television is probably worse, most of it at least. And if all of reality TV is bad, then, or at least most of it, then, you know, I could see that. But ultimately my conclusion was like, it's really not a question I can answer. I can't answer if Big Brother should exist because I wouldn't exist as who I am right now without it. It's obviously been really good for me. That doesn't mean it's good for society, but it really helped me when I was growing up, and it really brings people together in such an interesting and unique way. And so, you know, it's certainly not a thing that I think that we should like pull out our pitchforks and say we need to abolish this thing. I think there are other things that would merit those efforts far more readily. But yeah, I mean, it's still definitely a sort of an open question to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the best example of a show that maybe is the worst from the stories we've heard is the show that inspired the book that inspired this, The Bachelor. I mean, that's, you know, famously a show that treats their contestants, they're, you know, not the best. But, you know, I think the saving grace of the live feeds is that now we've seen in Canada that when you try to take them away, the show goes away. So I think that I hope that, you know, Alison Grodner and Rich Meehan have saw what happened there and won't ever try to do that here, though they've done everything to cut everything possible around it that they could possibly do. But I have faith that they won't try to take the live feeds away. And that, like you said, I mean, if anything, you know, that allows us to hold them accountable and not go too dark, too bad that they might have, you know, the thought to do otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, Big Brother without live feeds does sound like a nightmare of all kinds of bad, like holding people for 100 days, with zero accountability for what's actually happening in that house is a significantly different issue to examine for sure.
Yeah. Have you talked to like Bailey or anyone from BB Canada those seasons without live feeds? Like, have they said anything about like that? Were the stories that maybe sound different in terms of what producers have tried to do with them that maybe you've heard from other American seasons or other Big Brother Canada seasons that did have live feeds?
I haven't talked too deeply with players specifically about that. I think that especially for pretty much anyone other than like Spicy V and Anthony, like they only know their own experience. So it's hard for them to comment on what the difference is. Obviously when it comes to Anthony and Spicy V, they kind of had their own drama that was, I think, a bigger thing for them than the rest of it. And they also didn't really run into too big of an issue with how things went down. Maybe it would have been a different thing if they had been portrayed in certain ways. What I can do is say that I've certainly talked to plenty of Survivor players, people from the Traitors, even the Amazing Race this season, who maybe have been on Big Brother before, or maybe even haven't. It's a significant difference to know that there are a lot of things being left out that really inform some of the behavior that you're seeing on the show, some of the decisions that are being made, some of the things that are being said. They take away that context, and then all of a sudden you look completely different than you felt in the moment because that context doesn't exist. And then on top of that, of course, like I think that, I get stuck on the Danielle Reyes thing all the time from the Traitors, where it was just like from day one, every single cutaway shot on that show was to Danielle shaking. And everyone was like, what a terrible liar. She's so obvious. Oh my God, she's the worst. And while, you know, I've heard that she certainly did have some shaking there, here and there, like that certainly was a part of it. Certainly wasn't every single time you would have cut away to her. And it's just, you know, it's the way that you have nothing else you can do there. Like, by all accounts, Daniel Reyes very nearly won as a traitor. She was essentially one vote away from that tie. And who knows what happens there, right? and yet from the first episode, you knew she was going to fail because of the way that they edited the show.
Yeah.
And you were told that you were essentially shown that she was an awful traitor who would eventually get her downfall. And so after an entire season, when it finally happened, you're like, well, of course she was never going to win. But like reality of the situation was completely different. If there were live feeds, if there were like a different way of seeing that season, you had been watching Danielle the whole time being like, how in the world is she getting away with it? She's incredible. And then right at the end, falter. And it's a completely different story. And that's just like, how good are you at the show? And how likable are you? It can get much, much worse. Yeah, I mean, it really is. And this is the bit I wrote about in the book, because I talked about Julia from Survivor and the experience that she had on the beach and how, you know, like all she has is her word, is to come off and say, this is what happened to me. It's nowhere even close to the show. In fact, I'm not even in the show. And that means you don't know me or like me at all, but you certainly know and like the people I'm talking about. And so I'm trying to say this, but you don't want to hear it. And you certainly have incentive to not believe me. And so, you know, it really puts people in a really difficult position. Yeah, I mean, I think obviously like the live feeds aren't a perfect solution, but they are, I think, far better than the reality that exists, even on shows like Survivor that you might think is like, you know, I think a lot of people look at Survivor more, and they think it's kind of like the better show, better produced, like maybe even more ethical. I don't think that's the case at all, actually. It's just that you don't see it in the way that you see it on Big Brother.
Yeah, I think especially Survivor Australia, and I don't think that you've seen like every season of Australian Survivor, but there was on this past, not Australia versus the World, but the season right before that, there was a girl named Morgan who I don't think we got a confessional from her till like episode 14 of that show. And then she just like disappears out of nowhere. And it's just like, what the hell happened to Morgan? And she still hasn't really come out to say, but there's allegations of things that have happened. And it's just like, they're clearly trying to hide something. She didn't go on the jury. Like it was, she just disappeared into thin air. And you know, that I think is probably a little bit of a similar situation to what Julia talked about, where it's just like, you know, something happened and she only has her word because we saw none of her experience. So yeah, that couldn't happen on Big Brother because, you know, in its current state, we have the live feeds that, you know, we will know a lot more than we do on any other show. Not everything, but we'll have a lot more of the story.
Yeah, they're still doing their best to hide as much as possible, especially nowadays. So there are going to be things that we miss. But for the most part, it's going to be a lot easier for people to give their full story and be heard and be seen in a way that just doesn't exist on any other reality show.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the traitors that we were talking about just a few moments ago, Dan Giesling is obviously a big part of this book. And after writing it, he made his big return to competitive reality TV on season two of The Traitors. First time in 12 years we had seen him on a show like this. So, you know, you wrote about how much watching him on BB had an impact on your younger self. But what was it like for you now as an adult to watch him play another social strategy show like this, you know, so many years later?
It was kind of cool, especially at first, but it just doesn't quite hit the same when it was, again, I felt like from very early on, basically the first episode, I was like, oh, he doesn't win. And the way that Traders operates is that they sink people. They, at least in the US, I've discussed this recently, that I've watched the UK celebrity version, and it was night and day the way that they edited their contestants, maybe because they were celebrities and they didn't want to dunk on them, but like everyone felt like a three-dimensional human being. Some people were being stupid sometimes and smart other times, but that didn't impact how likable we were supposed to find them, because they were just showing who they were. And it was so much better to me, because when I watch the US version and the Canadian version, I'm being told constantly, this person's bad, don't like this person. I just don't like that, especially if I know the person already. But even if I don't, even if it's just some random person, it's like, this is the dumbest human being you've ever seen. They constantly believe the traitors. It's like, okay, well, get over it. Like, like, why? Tell me why. Like, what is actually in their heads? That's interesting to me. So to that degree, it was not as painful as Danielle Reyes, because that was a full season, and people really hated her coming out of that. And I did not think that was fair. But it was certainly painful, to see them, in my opinion, underutilize Dan, and also for him to be in the situation that he was. In my opinion, it was an unwinnable spot, and I don't think he played it well. Either, but like from the second he was announced, I literally was like, well, that'll be fun while it lasts. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, unfortunately, but it could have been.
Yeah. Now, you know, someone else who we all know and love is about to be on season 4 of The Traitors US in just a few weeks. Rob Cesternino is going to make his big TV return as well. How are you feeling about that coming up so soon?
Listen, I feel like I'm like 2 for 10 in terms of people I know and like going on The Traitors and having a good time. You know, I'm hoping for number 3. it's gonna be annoying if I turn on the first episode and it's like, here's doofus Rob Cesternino. And it's just like, you don't have to do it that way. Rob is phenomenal television, even if he fails. So I'm hoping that, like, my hope is that let me tell you, I have no idea how well he does. I have no idea where he's placed. I have not asked him. He has not told me. I don't even know if he had a good time or if it sucked. I don't know any of it. So my hope is that he had a good time. My hope is that he sticks around for a long time. My hope is that he's likable on the show. And if he wins, great. But those are the 3 things that I really hope for him on The Traitors, because those are really the 3 winning category. Because winning the show is whatever. Nobody really cares.
Like a Chick-fil-A gift card, yeah, basically. Yeah. Do you have a preference or think he would be better as faithful or traitor?
I think he should be a traitor. I think most people should be traitors. I think that a lot of people will feel like, well, but I'll feel so nervous. Like, they're going to catch me. I'm not going to do well. But like, the thing is that whether or not you're a traitor, it's the exact same circumstance. You have to interact with people in the exact same way. They are still suspecting that you might be a traitor. You still have to convince them that you're not a traitor. It's like when you drive by a cop car and you're like, all of a sudden I am the best driver of all time. Whether or not you've got like a dead body in your trunk, you know what I mean? Like, you're still nervous. You're still like, and I'm sure you'd be more nervous for one than the other. But in this case, the difference is not I get a speeding ticket, I get arrested for murder. The difference is I lose one way or another way. It's the same. The real difference is you don't have to worry about getting murdered, which is the way, way worse option, in my opinion. I think getting murdered on The Traitors is the worst thing that can happen to you outside of being dunked on for an entire season, because you get murdered and you don't even get like an end of an episode. Like, it's the beginning of the episode. You're an afterthought. You just get erased from the show, and people will probably barely even remember you were on it in the first place. So, you know, I would, if Rob loses, I really hope he gets banished because that's way more fun.
I agree. Yeah.
Yes.
I think that I would prefer that he starts out as a faithful and then gets recruited to be a traitor.
That
I
is
think that's
in many ways
spot.
An ideal scenario. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I really want to see him as a traitor as well. So we'll have to wait and see just a few weeks away just or a month weeks. Away or so at this point, which is exciting.
I think a month is a month from today when we're recording this?
Yeah.
No, it's yeah. Is it January 8th? Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Oh my gosh.
Wow. Exciting.
Yeah, that's serious.
Almost. Countdown.
Yes, almost there. Well, back to Big Brother and your book. And the last few chapters really focused on the new era of BB and the post-diversity mandate. And unfortunately, this past year, we've kind of taken a step backwards from that when it comes to media rolling back the DEI initiatives. So do you have a hope that BB will continue to have more diverse casts regardless of that? Or do you think it's going to go back to the pre-2020 days?
Yeah, so Jesse has said that he plans to maintain the same directive, even though it's no longer required. I hope he sticks to that, you know? It doesn't seem like there's a ton of pressure to do otherwise. I think it's not an important enough show. Obviously, the current leadership at Skydance and Paramount, like if they cared enough to look, would probably say you're not allowed to do that. But like I said, I don't think it really hits their radar. So I hope that it sort of just kind of remains in place in that way. I think that, you know, I think that we've already seen a little bit of a shift in terms of the ways that production seems to not feel as accountable to outraged fans in terms of the way that they're going to edit their show and portray certain characters. Not that they've ever fully been that way, but I think that, and I've talked about this before, but like the vibe that I personally get is that they don't really agree with a lot of the standards of operating a show in the way that some of the, you know, more progressive fans might. And that when they do something that is in line with more progressive values, it's more because they're kind of being forced to. They're kind of holding their feet to the fire. And so I would say the way that I would predict it, at least, is that like they probably don't feel like their feet are on fire anymore. And they can kind of do what they want more so. And we can yell and complain all we want, but they're not beholden to us. And they've got some big pocket backup if they need it. So that would be my prediction, at least for the current sort of state of the country.
Yeah.
Do you think that like today Luke would be ejected from the game?
I think so. I think that that still crosses a line that is not acceptable. I think that you can be essentially as racist as you want, as long as you're not that obvious. Like that's yeah. still a line that is
yeah.
not really crossed, even from, you know, some of the more obviously racist people. And so, you know, I think the attitude is like, you guys had to say it, didn't you?
Right.
Like, you could, like,
messed up our schedule, yeah.
Not the attitude that they should have. Yeah. But what I do think is that I don't think Luke would have been ejected if nobody had caught it other than the producers. I mean, like I talked about on Survivor, it certainly didn't happen because nobody had to know. If just the contestants had heard it, I don't know. That would have been maybe a little bit more of a decision, but with live feeds, they would have been talking about it or trying to talk about it. They certainly would have been talking about it afterward. And so that would have been a little tricky. But it was live feeds. Live feeds were the reason that we caught it. And my guess would be that production was at the very, very least not happy that we caught it.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. And you tell the story of how you ended up podcasting for RHAP and the conception of the live feed updates. So has your approach changed at all to live feed updates over time, or has it been pretty consistent?
I think it's changed a little bit in terms of like the original idea for it was not entirely what I had in mind. And so I just kind of did what I wanted. and sort of forced it into the position that I wanted it to be in. And that was, you know, relatively in depth, going through as much as possible, telling a story every day. You know, one of the things that shifted fairly quickly was that like, it really was like a lot of the changes happened like immediately as it grew in the first season that we were doing it in season 19, you know, the updates got longer and, you know, I started doing impressions that season. And, you know, I think by season 20, we were already kind of like mostly locked in terms of what the general format is. But, you know, I think obviously it's something that I've been able to refine over time. And just, you know, enjoy it more and have different methods of note taking and organization and all of that.
Yeah, I felt like this
watching
season
your live feed updates.
Thank you.
Yeah, I feel like this season you were either like it was one or two extremes. You were either having a really good time with it or you were pulling your hair out, like so frustrated. But I felt like when it wasn't that, I did feel like over time, like it feels like you're having more fun with it, which I love.
Well, this season gave me a lot more to engage with, which was very fun and very exhausting. And so it's always like the thing is, there's always some amount of like mixed feelings when it comes to the show when I'm covering it, because the more it gives me, the more fun it is, the more engaging it is, and the more engaged the audience is. And like, it's really, really good and exciting, and also more and more and more exhausting and draining. And so it is this weird balance of like the more fun it is and the better the content, the more drained I become. And I just keep like pouring and pouring into it and like neglecting everything else, which is, you know, not ideal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you think if you weren't podcasting today that you would still be watching Big Brother, or was there a specific time that you can think of that you think you might have given up?
Well, as I talk about in the book, there were basically two times I nearly gave up. And both times it was Dan that brought me back. but since I started podcasting, there was never a time when I thought I wouldn't watch it anymore. If I weren't podcasting, if it wasn't my job, I would probably not be quite as diligent and involved and invested. And honestly, I'd probably, as a viewer, enjoy it more because of that. Just because, you know, being able to sort of like take a small break here and there would be nice. I mean, I can't imagine the world where I'm not watching it at all, you know, like to not have a season of knowledge of what happened, because it's not a show you can miss, because you can't ever get the experience of watching live feeds back. And that's still an entirely unique function of the show. Nothing else gives you that same thing. So. Yeah, you got it.
Who would, if you were to take a break for a season, who would take over for you doing the life of the fans? Nobody. That's why you are so important to the RHAP universe. I don't think anyone else would take over for you. And that's why we love you, Taryn.
Well, thank you. I mean, that was the thing. Rob really didn't think that it could ever be one person's job. And I was just like,
hold my beer. Yeah. Well, since writing the book, BB26 introduced us to the BB Blockbuster twist, of course, or it was known then as the AI Arena. And it appears to be set as a permanent fixture of the show for moving forward. The producers have pretty much confirmed that. So how are you feeling about that? Do you think that Tucker's influence on how it's being played currently is also here to stay?
I think that the twist overall, I think, is a good thing, that they have leaned into an issue of theirs, which is competitions, and at least found a way to make it more interesting, even though it has some deeper ramifications on the game otherwise. It's also just made the strategic navigation of the game a little more difficult for people that are unfamiliar with it. I think that the end result has been at least, you know, a season and a half or so of really good television. Obviously, the end game of 26 wasn't great, but
didn't have the blockbuster. It was over by then.
Exactly.
So.
Which is kind of the thing. Like, in many ways, the reason that part of the season was so boring was because they had leaned in so much to competitive ability that by the time they took out the thing that made the competitive part of it more interesting, all that was left were the competitive people that thrived in that environment, and no more wrinkle to the competitive game part of it. Sure. And so, you know, luckily in season 27, there was, you know, so much going on with Vince and Morgan, that aspect of it, even though it was a similar result, where basically, you know, one, maybe two people dominated the rest of the end game comps, there was still stuff going on. But in some ways it makes the game worse, but in many ways it makes it more interesting. And so if they're not going to fix the competitions, then at least we have something, even though not fixing the competitions makes that something make other parts even worse. And really the thing I would love is if they fix the competitions, yeah. but overall, I think it's better to have the BB Blockbuster than to not have it. But there are certainly some things they need to be watchful for moving forward, because there are definitely some pitfalls that may happen. You can't just say it worked twice, therefore it's permanent, we should keep it forever and not change it, because I do think there are some problems with it for sure.
Do you feel like, because I this is the way that I kind of look at it, but you know, you obviously know a lot more than I do, that I feel like BB16 really changed the meta of the strategy of the game, that Derek, you know, overhauled, broke the game basically. And then it really wasn't until 26 that I feel like the meta kind of changed again, that like the Tuckers and Angels of the world kind of changed it and made it a lot more chaotic and maybe not doing things that are good for your game, but are a lot more interesting, at least, than seeing this, you know, a big alliance steamroll through the end of the game. And then again in 27 we saw people like the Kellys of the world, you know, making these bonkers decisions. Do you feel like that we've kind of entered a new era in that regard?
I think that the shift in the previous two seasons is less about like the metagame actually like changing in terms of like what's the dominant strategy, and more so two primary things, which is and maybe a little bit of a third, but like the two primary things are the BB Blockbuster throwing in a wrench in the works, making it less predictable, like what's happening, and introducing another layer of sort of uncertainty in terms of like what you're doing and what you can plan for. And so it's that combined with the second primary thing, which is that they are casting fewer fans of the show, fewer people who know the meta, and more people who are prone to making bonkers decisions. And so you throw them in with a new wrinkle so that they can't really even properly study, and you get some chaos. And I think the third aspect is that they have altered the competition slightly. They've also they've been casting more athletic women, which has been helping even that playing field out a little bit, which also changes the landscape of the kinds of players that often succeed. So like if you pull together all of the athletic men to try to like get into a good alliance, you might find that that's not good enough anymore, even though it used to be. And so just a few small changes, some bigger ones, and then a bit of a shift in casting. And I think they're currently in this state of play that is similar to the Traders, actually, where it's like they're more so relying on the players themselves not understanding how to play than actually creating a game that's designed to play out in the way that they want.
It feels like maybe 27, you know, it was a rating success, like we talked about, and it does feel like it's more culturally relevant than it has been in years in a lot of ways. What do you think it was about this season that made that happen?
I mean, I think that the genre as a whole is sort of blossoming. Yeah. It's doing well. People are more interested in reality right now. They're really enjoying shows like Love Island and The Traitors. I think The Traitors is really at the forefront of reintroducing a more casual or even just like a newer fan base into the world of reality TV. And I think that because of that, we saw more interest in the show in general. As we talked about before, I think that like the slight reskinning of the aesthetic helped a little bit in terms of like not pushing people away too much. And I think it also helped that it was a good and entertaining season. I think it helped that it had Rachel Riley on it to really anchor it, bringing in old fans, but also entertaining new ones. And so I think that a lot of things kind of combined to make it work. But at the end of the day, I think the main thing is that it was just a good season. And I think that's important because I think we're seeing right now on Survivor, even though the genre is doing well, this season of Survivor is not particularly doing great. And it's because I think a lot of people do not feel like this is a great season of Survivor. So you also need to have good content to take advantage of the environment.
Sure.
Yes, definitely. And what would you say was the most rewarding part about writing the book for you?
The most rewarding part, I don't know if there's a single most rewarding part. Finishing it was cool, but like every little bit was really cool. Like I just got a tickle out of the way that I started the chapter about Dan. Like I just really enjoyed it. I really had a lot of fun weaving together the story of Taylor through those chapters, and the way that I place things together was like really satisfying for me as I was writing. And then similarly, like when I hear from people who point those things out and are like, oh, that was really satisfying, like that's even more satisfying to hear that it like worked and it landed with people. I think that's really like the biggest thing is feeling like I'm able to really connect with the people that that I wrote this book for ultimately, and that they feel similarly or they feel seen by it or they see me in it and the way that I wrote it and the things that I put into it. So like all of that, it's hard to fully like quantify down, but yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And what would you want the biggest thing that readers take away from the book?
I say this a lot. Genuinely, the biggest thing I want for people is that they enjoy reading it. So it's just like a good time. I wanted to write a book that meant something, that said something, and that was like crafted well. But at the end of the day, I also like it's the most important thing to me is that it's like enjoyable to read. That like you can read it and it's fun or it's interesting and it grabs you and you want to read it. Because when I read books, like I love really intellectual books. I love dry books. So I love all kinds of books. But my favorite ones are the ones that grip me and make me want to read them because I'm having a good time. And if you can make me have a good time and also you're saying something and also there's some cool stuff in there, then that's really the goal. And so, that was the goal for me. I think it's one of the most difficult things is to make something that really is fun to read and enjoyable. So I hope that people enjoy it.
You succeeded on that front for sure. I was listening to it and normally I listen to things on like, you know, 1.25, 1.3 speed. And I started on that. And then I was like, no, I don't want this to end. So I started going slower so that it would just last longer.
That's a great compliment because I do the same thing with books I really like. So
yes, yeah. I definitely enjoyed reading it as well. So you hit on that for both of us and I'm sure many others as well. But who has been the most surprising person that you've heard from saying that they've either read the book or just reached out to congratulate you?
Probably Jerry O'Connell.
Oh yeah, of course. Oh my God.
That was wild. I haven't heard from him since, but like that was pretty wild.
I don't think I even knew that he was like an RHAP fan. Like I knew he was a Big Brother fan, of course, but that was wild.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. That was certainly, I think, the most surprising.
Yeah, that was really, really cool. But before we go, we want to play a little game with you, Taryn. So in honor of BB27, we're calling it Triple Threat. I'm going to ask you a few BB-related questions, each of which you will have to come up with three answers for. Mm-hmm. So first, Allison Grodner calls you up and asks for three changes she should make to the game or the show. What are you telling her?
Competitions first and foremost. I can go into as much or as little detail about that as we want.
Go for it.
Basically, just make them more equitable. Make it so that most competitions have a relatively equal chance for anybody to win them. I think that would do wonders for the show in terms of entertainment value, in terms of intrigue, fairness, all of it. Number two, I would say overall presentation, if I can lump that in, the way that the show is edited, the way that the show is presented, the goofiness, all of that. If we can like be a little more serious, put a little more effort into storytelling and editing, that would be great. And then number three is, and maybe even the most important in terms of this is no longer strictly just like for the show, but like for society, stricter stricter adhesion to truth in editing. You know, let's hide less and show more. That would be huge.
All right, well, who are three house guests you think should be locks for a hypothetical All Stars 3?
Taylor, Chelsea. I'm just gonna be picking winners.
That works. They should all be
Taylor
there.
Taylor and Chelsea, I think, have to be locks. And then you can start to really maybe get more interesting for the third. Something like, and who should be a lock? Sorry, I'm taking the question
you're good.
Very serious.
As you should. I appreciate it. I have Allison on the phone right now, so I mean, you know, take your time.
I mean, honestly, it should be Ceree, but she'd never do it.
Oh, she wouldn't Izzy. Do another day Izzy. In that house. Izzy, yes, of course. Yeah. Of course. That's a good one. What are your top three BB seasons of all time?
Big Brother 10, Big Brother 7, Big Brother 14 are probably the three. But you know, like 24, like I haven't properly like super like reevaluated. 24 could certainly be in there in terms of just like the overall story of it. But then like how much do the negatives weigh it down? But those are kind of like the default three and have been for me for a long time.
Yeah. And then on the other side of that coin, what are your bottom three BB seasons of all time?
9. Honestly, I think Rachel Riley returning has improved 13 as a whole because it's now part of a larger story. Yeah. So that could have been in consideration, but I'm not sure it would be anymore. It's hard to not say 19. And then I'm really not a fan of 11, to be honest.
Mm.
You could maybe argue for All Stars 2, but
that's what I was going to think you were going to say. Yeah.
Most people probably do, but you know, it's something around those.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then lastly, who are three celebrities you would want to see on a hypothetical celebrity Big Brother 4?
Matt Eisman, who is a host on American Ninja Warrior. He actually won a season of Celebrity Apprentice. He is a fan of the show.
I was going to say, what have I seen him on that like is a similar competitive show?
For the record, it was not with Trump.
Yes. Arnold.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. But it would be cool to see him on. And then who else is even, I guess if I'm getting to choose anybody.
Yeah, choose anyone.
I mean, give me my guy, Cillian Murphy. He would not be entertaining television, but it'd be interesting. let's see, who's a third? Give me like a Yanyang Garnbret, the goat of climbing competition.
Oh,
climbing.
I was gonna say, I don't think I knew who that is. Okay.
She'd crush competitions and it would be boring in that way, but I think she'd be really interesting to watch.
All right. All right. I love it. All right. Well, Taryn, as much as I would love to beat your record of the Morgan Deep Dive, 7 hours, I think that covers it. Thank you so much for joining us today. Again, please go buy his book, Behind the Mirror, The Inside of the World of Big Brother. An incredible, incredible book, whether you are a Big Brother fan or not. Anything else that you want to plug? And where can our listeners find you if somehow, some way they haven't already?
I think the main thing, if you've already checked out the book, check out my Patreon. It's putting out a ton of content there, watching all kinds of fun shows like Squid Game and Traitors when that comes up, and Amazing Race and Survivor, all these things happening on Patreon, as well as an official book club for the book. So I go into I've been going chapter by chapter into like a bunch of detail over like the decision making behind the writing and the thought process and extra details and all kinds of hopefully fun stuff. So check out the Patreon.
Yes, absolutely. I can attest to that. I am a patron, and it's been very fun to not only the book club, which has been, of course, very fun, but love your reaction videos. It's like there are certain shows like Traitors Canada, Celebrity Traitors, that I will, if I haven't already watched the episode when it comes out, if I see that yours comes out first, I'm just watching it with you that way. And it's very, very fun. Thank you. Love that with Jet Lag. I hope you're going to be doing new season coming out pretty soon here. So I love all of it. So yeah, Taryn, thank you so much. We really appreciate you coming on here. And thank you so much for listening. Be sure to follow us at Let's Chat Reality on all social media and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. So thank you so much. And we will chat with you guys again next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye.